if you really want to get good at closing sales and closing deals and want to distinguish yourself against other salespeople, you got two things you need to learn. Learn how to ask really good questions and tell really good stories. These are the two most persuasive things that you could do to help you close more sales.
Every single message you deliver is really a sales call. Either you are selling or being sold. Salespeople love to brag about their skills. And the truth is, your success in closing sales depends on your skills, your abilities, and finding the right training. And the great news is, you have come to the right place here at the How to Sell Show with your hosts, Dale Bell and Scott Silvenbell. And be sure to join the party at howtosell.live and download your copy of The 10 Common Mistakes Salespeople Make.
Aloha from Sacramento, California. Today is a great day. Today we're going to talk about the two most powerful forms of communication, and those are questions and stories. And, you know, I was given this lesson, I want to say in 2005, 2006-ish, by my good friend and mentor, Dr. Kevin Hogan, from a recording that he did. And it left quite an impact on me. It left quite an ability to go through and try to figure out how to make this work best for me. So I'm going to give you some highlights of what I learned, you know, over the last 15, 20 years of asking questions and dealing with stories in front of buyers and clients. It'll really help you out. So today we're going to start with questions. You know, questions make people think. Questions make people work for an answer when you put in the right amount of work. And when you ask somebody a question, they don't have to answer you. And so sometimes you can leverage that weight by knowing that they don't want to answer you and they're not going to answer you, but they have to think about it. And there's been plenty of times in sales calls or in negotiations where I'll ask somebody a question and I can tell that they're uncomfortable and they don't want to answer it. But, you know, one of the things is you have to get used to the silence sometimes. You have to wait. And I see a lot of overzealous or salespeople who really want to go out and close deals, and they don't think of playing the game of chess or playing the game of checkers with a buyer, whatever way you want to explain it, of putting some time in between questions to make people think and make people leverage what's going on in their head. They want to rush to a conclusion so they can hurry up and speed up the deal and close the, so they can speed up the deal and close the sale. And, you know, part of this is salespeople will create a process of asking questions where they have an answer that they want, and it's not from a place of curiosity, it's from a place of proof. And what happens is when you're able to watch this in a sales call, it looks like a ping pong match in front of a jury, where isn't it true that this is what happened, and didn't you do this, and didn't you, it's very accusatory. And one of the things that you're going to find is when you come from a place of curiosity, and when you come from a place of I'm just gathering information, people are more apt to have a conversation with you the moment that they feel like you've made a judgment on whatever they're going to say or whatever they're going to do. They tend to start shutting down. And part of this happens with the way that you use follow-up questions. So like in the world of sales, they'll tell you the fortune is in the follow-up, which I do agree with, you know, making follow-up phone calls, emails, you know, calling people back, getting a way to get back in. That's one form of follow-up. But what they don't tell you is the fortune is also in the follow-up question. And how you ask this question really does matter. It's all based upon pitch, tone, and timing. So if you want to really get good at asking questions, there is a fear or phobia that you're really going to have to get over. And that is what you look like on camera and what you sound like in audio of a recording of a video. And one of the greatest things that you could do is you could take your sales presentation and you can record it with the permission of the people that are sitting next to you. So this is the way that I would always do it. I would say, hey, look, Mr. and Mrs. Buyer, I'm working on getting rid of catchphrases and pauses and ums and ahs. And when you let me record this today, I'm going to give you $100 off my best price. And they would inevitably say yes, and I'd have them sign a form. And what I would do is I would go through and I would listen to the conversation in the beginning. It hurt. Oh my goodness, it hurt. I was not good. I was horrible. It was very bad, very bad. And what happened was over time, I started seeing where I'd ask a question, and if I would have just waited and milked it for another 2 or 3 seconds, the person would have come back with an answer, but I was too quick to try to prove a point. Or when I was talking to them and I was trying to draw out information, my pitch and tone was wrong, and I wasn't coming across as curious. It was coming across as aggressive. And this is one of the most valuable things that I could say: if you can do it legally, you should do it legally. If you do it illegally, I do not condone that, because different states, different countries have rules about you recording people. And so figure out a way. Your job as a salesperson, your job as an entrepreneur is to make it happen. So those are my three favorite letters, M-I-H, make it happen. And you do that by figuring out a way to legally have a conversation with somebody and get them to allow you to record so that you can go through and listen to your questions that you're asking. You're looking for the pitch and tone. You're looking for the time in between the questions and the next follow-up question. And then you're also looking to see how they respond back. And one of the coolest things that you could do is you can get a notepad and a pen. And one of the ways that you can milk for time is by writing out a really long answer. And then what you do is you keep looking at the pad or the piece of paper. And then when you're ready, you look at the person and you tilt your head forward and you raise your eyebrows. And through body language, that's a sign of like, there's probably some more. Or you could even say, hey, can you give me another example? Can you explain it to me another way? Would you be willing to share with me why you say that? I need some help here. I don't quite understand. And sometimes it's a matter of playing dumb. And with no belief of any direction of what direction you're going to try to take it, it is complete curiosity on your part. And this is the point where salespeople typically lose it. They don't feel like they're coming from a standpoint of curiosity. They feel like they're coming from a standpoint of aggression, and it feels like it's a court of law. You want to look for good places to find good questions, and you can get them off of drama movies. At the point of drama movies where there's a lot of tension, there's usually good questions. So that's one way to do it. When you watch people that are having a high-level conversation, maybe about something that you don't believe in. So whatever your politics are, pick the opposite and go look at some of the people's questions that you don't really side with. You're going to be too close to the things that you believe in. So listen to some of the questions. You might pick up a different way of asking something. You might find something and go, I never thought of it that way. When you take a look at it, there's plenty of people in your industry that they all ask the same questions. And your job is to be different than every other salesperson. If you go in and ask 10 questions, and the next guy goes in and asks 10 questions, and the next guy goes in and asks 10 questions, they're all the same, the people are going to be like, I don't want to go through this. It's all going to come down to price. You have to be completely different or a little bit different than every other salesperson. So one of the things that you do is you figure out all the questions that every salesperson asks that's going to be similar. And you figure out a way to get the person to give you that information before you come out. If possible, when possible, it's not always a way that it can happen, but that person is going to appreciate that you did not make them go through sitting through the same questions over and over and over again. And in today's digital age, there's too many different places where you can find survey forms, SurveyMonkey, Typeform, Response Suite. There's probably 400 or 500 other places where you could get surveys done and have that stuff filled out before you even show up. And it's all low-level information. It's all factual. It's all boring to the buyer. And this could be like, hey, look, I'm just going through the information that you gave me. Let's go over a few things. Here's the data that I have. Can you confirm it with me? And be very curious. If you become argumentative, you are going to lose every single time, I promise you. You know, when you take a look at it, you could figure out how to ask situational questions. Like, when this goes down or when this happens, what do you think is going to be the best outcome? What do you think the best way that this is going to get fixed? And you have to pay attention to how you end the sentence. You have to pay attention to how you ask that question, because how you trail off at the last couple of words on a question really to determine if it's going to be argumentative or not. There's a difference between, that's very interesting. Tell me more. And, you know, that's really interesting. Tell me more. Like, you're going to have completely different responses from the buyer. I see this happen occasionally, especially when salespeople are under stress and they're in free fall, meaning that they're in panic mode and they don't know what to do next. So it's panic plus loss of control of the sales call, usually leads to free fall. And they start asking the wrong types of questions. They start saying, you have to agree with me that this is true. So don't you agree? Wouldn't you agree with this? Wouldn't you agree with that? And it creates a lot of problems because the person's like, I don't want to agree. Anytime that somebody comes to me and goes, you have to agree with me, I'm a contrarian. Like in my mind, I'm like, I don't have to agree with you for anything. I'm going to find a way out of it and I'm not going to agree with you. So don't put people in that position. So that's going to wrap up the section for questions. Stories. When you're able to take stories and questions and wrap them together, one of the things you're going to find is you have the dynamic duo of persuasion. And where I see salespeople really struggle, or people in general struggle, is they have stories that have no point. They don't relate to the buyer. And if you're going to tell somebody a story, you're taking up mental real estate. There better be a very good reason why you're telling a story. And early on in sales, I would tell stories because I thought that it was my job to be the rock star. And I thought it was my job to be the person that was important, and not realizing that I was just chewing up mental real estate and not getting anything done. And I wasn't closing deals. You know, I was like the 9th or the 10th worst salesperson on the planet. So if you're going to have a story, there better be a darn good reason why you're telling it. There better be a very good reason why you're telling a story, and it better be well thought out. People remember stories. If I tell you 2 weeks ago, I went out to the North Shore of Oahu and I went and watched the sunset with giant sea turtles, and it started raining at the end of the day, so everybody left the beach. I was the only one there. I was literally the only person on the beach to watch the sunset. I watched it by myself. I was wearing a brown shirt. I didn't have shoes on. And that night I went and got a slice of pepperoni and pineapple pizza. Okay. You can pretty much tell me that story back and remember about 80% of the facts, and you're going to be pretty darn close. And so people remember stories very well. And when stories are told in a good way, people want to tell that story for you. And there's an added benefit when you've got a really good story. Someone's going to try to tell their friend, their family worker, family member, their coworker, the same story that you did to prove that you're a good storyteller. Pitch, tone, and timing really matter. You know, how you use your voice, you could use it for a hammer and just be like, boom, here it is. Or you could use your pitch and tone as a scalpel and just use your words in a way that people are compelled to listen to you. And then there's also one of the things that you find is when people tell good stories and they're good storytellers, they know how long to pause. They know when to speed up when there's something about anxiety. They know when to pause when there's danger or trouble, because it causes people to listen more. And, you know, part of your job is getting very good at telling stories, because there's going to be a point where you sit down with a buyer and the buyer is going to look and he's be like, you know what? All salespeople are the same. And then there's you, closer. You closer, you walk in and you are not like every other salesperson. You do things a little bit differently. You have conversations with the people. You ask them really good questions. You pause between questions. You do good follow-up questions. You tell good stories, and you pause when you need to in a story. And people remember this type of stuff. They look and they're like, I don't know what it is about that guy or that girl, but they are way effective at communicating. I want to spend some more time with them. And I find this interesting that anytime that they do studies on buying and they have people rank what their priorities were in a sales situation, that price is consistently like number 4 or 5. But if you talk to salespeople, price, the reason why somebody didn't buy is always price. It's always price. And I see too many times where salespeople go in, they tell stories that have no point. They ask questions that everybody else asks. And then they don't understand why the person didn't buy from them. Well, they weren't masterful. They didn't have anything that really allowed that person to be engaged, or that buyer to be engaged, to make them go, I really want to buy from this guy or from this girl. Stories that are too rich in detail and have too many points of interest, that it's too much for the mind to try to conceive. We've all been there with the person that's telling the long-winded story and you're like, please, can a meteor come out of the sky and just drop on this guy's head? You know, I promise I'll go to church on Sunday if that happens. We've all been there. We have all been there. And somebody who just goes too far for a story, just it's too much. So a story should have like 3 points to it: a problem, a climax and a resolution. And it should be pretty easy to tell, 2 or 3 minutes at the most. You know, funny if it needs to be, serious if it needs to be. But here's the thing. The more over the top it is and the more unbelievable it is, the more you start having a problem with the human brain going, this doesn't sound true. And then it builds skepticism. So when you deal with hypnosis, they have this thing called the critical factor. And the critical factor is the point in the back of the brain that goes, I don't know if I believe that or not. That doesn't sound true. This story's a little bit far-fetched. This story's a little bit over the top. And anytime you hit that, you're pushing the wrong buttons in the brain. You're no longer telling a story with a point. You're now building skepticism and creating problems for yourself. So here's what you do. Is for every objection that you get, you should have a story that's 2 or 3 minutes about somebody who had the same problem and the way that you were overcome it. So old school sales is going to teach you the feel, felt, found method. I understand how you feel. Many people have felt the same way before. But once you see what we have to offer, you're going to understand. Okay, we're using 1960s technology. Why don't we move up some information for you? Why don't we take and say, hey, look, can I share something with you? And then they say yes, and then you say, I got this story, and it's pretty interesting. It's going to be pretty interesting for you. You're going to want to hear what happens. And then you tell them 2 or 3 minutes, and it is the better way of using feel, felt, found. Like, that's the old school way, and it's considered pretty much lazy today. And if you do it to most people, they're going to be like, oh, great, here comes the feel, felt, found method. But you can wrap up a story using these elements, and you can do the same thing and have way better results, and that person's going to remember what's going on. You should practice telling stories. You should practice working on your stories. It's interesting, you know, how often I'll work with closers and I'll say, how often do you practice? And they say, all the time. Like, well, no, tell me about that. What do you mean you practice? Well, on my own time, I'll meet with a voice coach. On my own time, I will meet with salespeople who are struggling. They're always looking for 1 or 2% way to get better at what they do. You can tell and listen to stories. You can listen to stories. And once you're done listening to the story, draw it out, diagram it out, draw the bell curve, draw the where the problem was, draw the climax, draw the resolution, and figure out how you could work that story for your benefit as long as it's true. You know, figure out a way to use somebody else's story to help benefit you where you can and where it's ethical. One of the coolest things that I found for telling a story is when you start in the middle. And curiosity is one of the coolest tools that you could ever learn about. And if I could pay for a study in a college where they go out and they do things under the guise of psychology, all my studies would be around curiosity. That would be my secret weapon. If I was a superhero, people, you know, want to be able to jump over a building in a single bound. You know, people want to be able to fly through the air. People want to be able to have X-ray vision. For this example, I would love to have curiosity. It would just be one of those things where people would be like, I want to tell you everything. I want to give you the information, but I would do it through the guise of curiosity. When you start a conversation in the middle, when you do it the right way, there is something about that where people are like, well, wait a minute. Why are you like, they're not going to say this to you. They're just going to stare at you and listen. They're going to be like, why are you telling me this story from the middle? One of the examples that I taught for one of my past coaches was my story that I tell at the end of the time when I'm on a stage. And my story starts in the middle. And there's a reason for it, because I started at the most amount of climax. And then I go backwards and I start, you know, retelling the story again from the very beginning. And, you know, there's something about an open loop where you're starting a conversation where people have to pay attention. It really does matter. Something for you to realize. Quentin Tarantino, who made movies like Pulp Fiction and The Magnificent Eight and Kill Bill, he's a very good storyteller. And somebody like him is masterful of putting stories together like a puzzle. Probably getting started, you're not going to be him. It's not going to work out as easily for you. Get good with mastering the basics.
Thanks for checking out this episode of the How to Sell Show. You can join the party at howtosell.live to get the show notes, links, updates on new episodes, recordings of previous episodes, articles, as well as videos. You may not know this sales secret, but sharing this episode with a friend will bring you good luck. See you soon. Mahalo.